Sometimes I was, well, Fridays, quite often we spent an evening with friends in the church and have meals with them. And my wife and I and another person were in a conversation. Well, actually, they were talking, and I was kind of listening in and staying out of it for a while. And they were talking about the concept of being unequally yoked. And I got to thinking about that, and the question was asked, you know, is that applicable to the conversation we're having? And I thought, you know, because it came up about being about marriage. Specifically, marriage was mentioned. It's, you know, that's specifically about marriage, this person opinioned. And I thought, you know, I'm not sure that's the case. I said, if you read chapter 5 and 6 and 7, and I had scanned them in the meantime while the conversation was going on, I scanned those chapters, said the word marriage and husband or wife appeared nowhere in any of those three chapters. And so while it's a principle, I think, that could be applied in marriage, I felt like it was a more generalized way of life, a way of understanding that we, and so I thought, well, how interesting. Here I've been 30 plus years in the church, and I've never really heard a really clear explanation of what it means to be unequally yoked, or even what yoking, and I'm not talking about the kind of, with a center in it, you know, the yellow thing in the center, but yoked, what's that, what is that all about? And it could be that, you know, I imagine here in this audience, we're a little more familiar with farming and some of the history of farming. And so you'll understand perhaps more than some of the younger people back home do. But what is yoking? What is it all about? So primarily, it's about two draft animals, in this case, two Belgians, yoked together. They have each have their own collar, and through leather harnessing, they're connected back to this plow that the drover or the teamster or the farmer, in this case, is using to plow the ground. And believe it or not, less than 200 years ago, up until about 200 years ago, mankind generally lived the same way they had for thousands of years. This technology was largely the way Earth was turned over, something along these lines. You might look in ancient Egypt and you'll find that they had a large limb or something that they had stuck a piece of wood into that stuck through, and that the animals would drag that along and that would break the ground up. And over time they found that making plowshares, this sharp iron blade that cuts the ground and then rolls it over, the shaping causes the earth to flip over, is more efficient. But largely the technology was unchanged for most of man's history. It's only been in the modern industrial age where we've gotten divorced from the ground, we've gotten divorced from farming in most cases, and so many kids nowadays think that beef comes from the grocery store, and that, you know, all the stuff that they eat just magically appears there in bins, cleaned and ready to be consumed. But I think most of us in this room understand that's not the case. It requires a lot of effort, a lot of work, a lot of, you know, a lot goes into it. And it goes back to yoking. And we come back to the yoking, though. What is this all about? What's this principle of yoking from the Bible all about? And you have in this situation, you have the two animals connected together to accomplish some task, some goal, in this case, plowing the ground, directed by a teamster or drover. And so today, well, I want to look into the meaning and symbolism of yoking, what it is all about, what's going on, what it means, what works in being yoked, and what doesn't work. And we'll take a closer look at unequally yoked. I think we'll come to a more refined understanding. And perhaps we'll also take a look at the yoke that we all want to share in, the actual yoke, and what that means as well. We'll look at biblical examples of yoked, yoking, and yoke, those forms of the word. Now, I have all the scriptures that I'm going to directly refer to. They'll be on the screen, so feel free if you just want to take your notes and not open your Bibles. That's up to you, but they're all faithfully put up there. I heard this particular message. It was given by Barry Cortice. It's on ucg.org. I listened to it. It was the only message, the only article of any kind that I could find that really did a great job of addressing the topic. I reached out to Mr. Cortice. He was kind enough to share his PowerPoint with me. I've done some minor modifications to it, but largely this is, you know, the message that I heard, just in my own words, if you will. So we come to 1 Kings 12, verse 4, and this is following Solomon. Following Solomon's kingship, his son Rehoboam took over, and the people came to him, and they asked him something. They said, you know, we've, your father made our yoke heavy, now therefore lighten the burdensome service of your father and his heavy yoke which he put on us, and we'll serve you. You're the new king. Your dad made it kind of tough. We'd really appreciate it if you'd lighten up a little bit. You know, basically, in my words, paraphrasing a little bit. And I'd like you to notice the word right there, lighten. They didn't say dump it all, take all of your burden off of us. They were thinking back 100 years ago, approximately 100 years previously, when they'd asked God for a king, and Samuel had told them, he said, when you get a king, he's going to want this. He's going to do this. He's going to take your best. He's going to take your best sons, your best daughters, your best produce, your best animals. Everything will be his. And you'll have to accept that. And they were like, okay, yeah, we'll do it. Sure. You know, because God as king didn't need any of that. He didn't take anything from them except the tithes, which he actually handed on to more people, to the priesthood. You know, it was a different system. And they had to accept that system. So they made this decision to accept kings. And it appears here 100 years later, they've accepted the reality of that decision. You know, they know they're going to be taxed. They know that they're going to have a yoke upon them by the king. Don't take it off, but lighten up the load, would you? That reference when they asked for the king, you can find in 1 Samuel 8:11. We won't be reading that today. But effectively, they made a choice, and it came with a burden. That choice placed a burden upon them, and they were bearing that burden. And then some time passed. I mean, we continue in the story. Then the young man who had grown up with Rehoboam spoke to him, saying, thus you should speak to the people who have spoken to you, saying, your father made our yoke light, our yoke heavy, but you make it lighter on us, and thus you shall say to them. Now recall that he had already spoken to the elders of the people, to the elders of that had counseled his father, and asked them what he should say, and they said, oh yeah, if you lighten the load, these people will serve you forever. They'll love you. They'll do anything for you. And he decided to listen to the young men. My little finger shall be thicker than my father's waist. And now, whereas my father put a heavy yoke on you, his friends continue to counsel him, but my father chastised you, I will add to your yoke, my father chastised you with whips, but I'll chastise you with scourges, whips with little pieces of iron in the ends of them. They hurt more. So Jeroboam and all the people came to Rehoboam the third day, as the king had directed, saying, come back to me the third day. Then the king answered the people roughly and rejected the advice which the elders had given him. And he spoke to them according to the advice of the young men, saying, my father made your yoke heavy, but I will add to your yoke. My father chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scourges. Rehoboam ignores the elders. He listens to the young men. And don't we see the pressures of taxation echoing down through the day? I mean, all of us right now are probably, if we haven't done them, you know you got to. Taxes are due next week. I'm already done. I'm happy to be done with it for the year. But in varying degrees throughout the world, this burden of kingship, this burden of government has been on our shoulders from the beginning, almost in effect. From the time the kings came into power, taxation has existed. And we've all borne that burden in varying degrees, depending on where we live. We're very blessed to live in this nation. I certainly appreciate it. But let me tell you, it's hard sometimes to get the cost of living to match up to my ability to pay. It's challenging, and I'm sure it is for some of us, if not all of us. And it adds to my desire, and I'm sure to your desire, for the kingdom of God, where all that will change. We'll come back to a kingdom and a king who doesn't require the best from us, all that best from us, all of our physical blessings, if you will. It won't take those things. So a yoke in this example can be a burden that's placed by a bad decision or an unfair decision or a combination thereof. A bad decision in this case to decide to have a human king, and a poor decision by that king or a king down the line to make things more challenging, past or present. It can be a bad decision by a single person or by a group of people or by a governing authority. And we see that's the yoke in this case from the Bible. We can find another example in Deuteronomy 28, and we'll read verses 47 through 48, where it talks about a yoke of slavery and bondage as a result of the sin that's not been dealt with appropriately. And it speaks of a yoke of iron, and this comes from Deuteronomy 28, the blessings and curses chapter, which I'm sure we're largely familiar with. We read there in Deuteronomy 28, verse 47 through 48, because you did not serve the Lord your God with joy and gladness of heart for the abundance of everything, therefore you shall serve your enemies, whom the Lord will send against you, in hunger and thirst and nakedness and in need of everything, and he will put a yoke of iron on your neck until he has destroyed you. Now, a yoke of iron is a different thing. We'll look at that in a moment. This picture shows a woman using a human yoke. And it's actually a yoke designed to make burdens a little easier to bear. If you'll notice, she has her hands in her pockets. It's a cold morning, but she's still bearing two buckets on her on the yoke that's across her shoulders. It allows her to bear a load and do it more efficiently, more effectively. And they can come in various designs. Hers was just the yoke with hooks on the end. This one has these hanging hooks so that the things hang a little lower, and it's designed to go around the neck a little more comfortably, and perhaps it was fit to the individual. And again, it comes in various designs, but Deuteronomy 28:47 is a warning from a God. It's not a device that helps, but instead that yoke of iron. This is an example of a yoke of iron. It's very, very heavy. As you can see, it's very thick metal. It overlaps in places, and it's very it places a great burden on the person who's carrying it, and it stays on all the time. It's very different. It's restraining. It's unyielding. It's confining. And in this analogy from the Bible, it comes about when sin is not addressed and the curses have been activated, the curses of bad behavior, of sin, leading to slavery, to sin. And this is a literal of the figurative burden of the iron collar that can come upon us, that yoke of iron that Satan puts on us in slavery to sin. And of course, in the history of man, we've seen many people enslaved in something like this, wearing something like this at various times. But within the framework of the Bible, that yoke of iron speaks of the burden of sin. It's a different kind of yoke. You see, it's not designed to bear a load. It's designed to put a load on it, but it is designed to place a load on the person, to restrain and confine them, to take away freedom, to take away comfort, to take away rest. And we read about in Lamentations 1 verse 14, the yoke of my transgressions was bound. They were woven together by his hands and thrust upon my neck. He made my strength fail. The Lord delivered me into the hands of those who I'm not able to withstand. Sometimes God chooses to punish a nation or to allow the punishment of an individual that is sinning. And God can also choose to remove from captivity. Look at Leviticus 26 and verse 13, where he says, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. He's speaking to ancient Israel, and he's telling them what he did, that you should not be their slaves. I have broken the bands of your yoke and made you walk upright. The bands of slavery pull down, they overburden, they overload people, and there's no rest and relaxation in that. There's no happiness in that. And God broke that iron band, in effect, from their neck and made them free and brought them to a better land. And it looks forward to a future fulfillment when God will remove the remnant of Israel, and you can read about that in Isaiah 10, verse 27. So we talk about the yoke of iron. That yoke can describe bondage or slavery. And it's often a punishment or a consequence for sin within the context of the Bible. And it's placed upon an individual or a nation that has not reconciled themselves to God, who have shown unwillingness to repent. And so in that way, again, this is self-induced. Because God set the law of curses and blessings. In effect, and so, because he warned them, because he gave them opportunity after opportunity, in effect, they put that band around their own neck, didn't they? And that's really what we do. That's the option. In effect, as the called out ones of God, we can go back to that slavery. We can choose to put that band of iron back around our neck that Satan placed upon us, that birth into the human family placed upon us. But we've been called away from that. He's broken that band off of us. So we don't want to be returning to that and self-inducing that suffering to ourselves. So we have here is a picture of a team of oxen. And in the Bible context, that's another way that yoke is used to describe a team of animals. In this case, we have two oxen connected by a yoke, which is just, in this case, a beam across their shoulders, and it's connected to them through straps that go around their neck and shoulder area to keep it in place and allows them to magnify their energy into the yoke and pull the burden, whatever. In this case, again, they're plowing, in this, as you see in this picture. And the biblical reference for this, if you, we can look in Job 1, verse 3, where it speaks of Job, and it says, also his possessions were 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen. So a yoke can refer to a group, a pair of animals. So if he had 5,000 yoke of oxen, he had 1,000 oxen. But they were trained to work together. Each of these pairs were used to working with one another. In U.S. history, you might think about the 20-team Borax, mule team, 20-mule team Borax, I think it was. They had this picture of a giant wagon and 20 yoke of mules. So that's 40 mules working together in concert to pull this enormous weight across the desert. And so, you know, kind of a little U.S. reference, if you will. But within the Bible, that's another way that yoke is used. It describes a team of animals. And it can also describe, in effect, in kind of indirect way, a amount of work that can be accomplished. And we find this in 1 Samuel 14:14, where it speaks of the first slaughter of Jonathan and his armor bearer maid that was about 20 men within about a half acre of land. Now, it's an indirect reference, but an acre is a word that denotes the amount of area that a team of oxen can process through by plowing in a day. So it denoted an area of land. So when it speaks of a half acre, that means half of the area that a team of oxen could plow in a day was the area that Jonathan and his armor bearer were working with. It's kind of an indirect reference to yoke. But if somebody spoke of a yoke, you know, a farmer could say, well, I did a yoke's worth of work. Well, he's talking about a day's worth, you know, he did an acre of plowing. It comes from an old English word, the acre, and I found this definition, I just Googled it, and this is what popped up first. So I put, and there were a number of different references that agreed, so I went ahead and just jammed that in there. But basically, it's from the old English acer, or acre, denoting an amount of land that a yoke of oxen could plow in a day. Word for word, right off Google. It's of Germanic origin, and it's related to the Dutch acre and German acker, or field. And in any case, you can see that we basically have a yoke defining, we have a yoke defining a number of different things. So it symbolizes the burden of our hardship, where some of us bear a load, or of slavery, of bind, of bondage. It can denote a team of oxen or of draft animals working together to accomplish some kind of work, or it is the amount of work that can be done in a particular day. So that's basically the three general definitions of how yoke could be applied from the Bible. And so now we have a little better understanding of, and we're going to continue to take a look at what a yoke is for, what works, what doesn't, and why you would even want to combine a couple animals together. When oxen are paired, it allows them to combine their efforts to accomplish a task. And when it's done right, it can accomplish great things. Thinking back 200 years ago, when man was using this as their primary form of energy to farm, to haul loads, what have you, realize that these animals were incredibly valuable. They were the livelihood. They were the motors, if you will. You know, when it talks about Job and his 500 yoke of oxen, that was talking about his wealth. They're very important to the farmer, very important to the people of the time that were using them. And even now, in this day and age, there are people that still use yoked animals to accomplish work. You think of the Amish and a number of other groups of people that are still using something like this. And it's, you don't want to do something that's going to harm the animals. And it seems that they were almost designed for this role, that God, you know, designed them to work together in this way, and we can learn something from it. And that's why the Bible uses the terminology, the yoke, yoking. And it uses that, it carries that into a figurative, so we get a better understanding. You know, when oxen are paired, it allows them to combine their efforts to accomplish a task. And when it's done right, when these animals are paired correctly, they can do amazing things. We read in Deuteronomy 22, verse 10, "You shall not plow with an ox and a donkey together." You know, two different kinds of animal. Now, either one of them paired, two donkey or two oxen paired together, can work really well together. But you put one of each, and you got a problem. There's a challenge, an effort, things go wrong. Now, whether the teamsters or drovers knew, whether they got it from God, from the Bible, biblical understanding or not, they realized very quickly, if they put them together, these very valuable animals, that they're very different animals, and that they can't work together. You know, a donkey and an ox are very different. They eat different foods. They have different leg lengths. When the yoke is on the oxen's shoulder, if you use an ox yoke and attach a donkey to it, you know, he's going to try and pull away from it. He's going to injure the oxen and himself. And we saw in the picture, you know, it was a whimsical drawing, but it's effectively what goes on. You know, the donkey gets angry and upset and fights, and the oxen stands there and goes, "What's going on?" And everybody gets hurt. And very little can happen. Very little goes well. Ox can pull heavy loads. They tend to lower their heads. Mules less so. They wear a different kind of yoke when they're paired together. And we saw something like that with the Belgian draft animals at the beginning. It'll make them both miserable. Both animals are just very miserable when they pull heavy loads, when you try to have them pull together. You know, the ox drops his head. The mules don't. The oxen kind of leans into the load. The mule does it differently. You'll find them rubbing each other raw and just injuring one another and even hampering one another. You probably could get the job done, but it isn't going to be the way you want it to. It won't be efficient. It won't be effective. And it's just going to be a lot of effort for the teamster and for the team. So, you know, it's important to consider that in this unequally yoked in life, That's the goal point of unequally yoked, where it's talking about that. It's, but we'll get into that more in a few minutes. So why would you even want to team up? Why would you want to put a couple animals together? It's interesting when you look at a team of oxen that have spent a considerable amount of time together in a yoke, is that they rarely separate by choice. They really want to be with each other. I mean, if you can find one of the, when they're out of the yoke, if you find one of the animals, look somewhere nearby, the other one will be nearby. It's almost like they develop this special bond that goes beyond the yoke. And they want to spend time together. They rarely are separated by choice. They like to be together. They have this desire to walk and work in the same direction. They just want to do things together. You know, Philippians 4 speaks to this aspect, where Paul enlists a yoke fellow to help with a situation that was going on in the church. "I urge you also, yoke fellow," you know, true companion is another way of translating that particular word there in Philippians 4, true companion. "Help these women who labored with me in the gospel, with Clement also, and the rest of my fellow workers whose names are in the book of life." People who are yoked together, animals who are yoked together, have to go in the same direction in order to be effective. They have to be working in the same direction. So they're not fighting each other. Paul in 2 Corinthians 6 is referring back to the principles of the unequal yoking that we read about in Deuteronomy 22, verse 10. Now, the issue in Corinth was about idolatry. And there's three King James words that are translated as idolatry in the Bible. There's teraphim, ketolidolos, and adiolatria. I believe that's how you say that third one, or something like it. And you can hear the word idolatry in there, can't you? It carries through. Idolatry has a simplified definition, if you will. If we simplify it from the Bible, it just says when anything is valued more than God. Anything that we put ahead of God, it's not just about a carved piece of wood or that's adorned with metal. It's really about what are we putting ahead of God. And so he was cautioning the Corinthians about what were they putting ahead of God? What were they allowing themselves to be yoked to rather than God's ways? You know, that was the concern, was this idolatry. In our modern age, what are we yoked to? What are the things that we that get between us and God? What's more important to you or me right now than spending time with God? You know, do we have a favorite television show or some activity that takes up all of our time, or some focus on something that is off of a point of view towards God? We've been called to something amazing. He continues, we continue in 2 Corinthians 6, and we read in verse 11, "O Corinthians, I've spoken openly to you. Our heart is wide open. You're not restricted by us, but you are restricted by your own affections. You're being held back by the things that you are focused on. Now, in return for the same, I speak as to children, you also be open. Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers." So here we have it. Here's that phrase that it gets connected to so many different concepts. What does it mean to be unequally yoked? Well, we've looked at it a little bit, haven't we? We've talked about the donkey and the ox. You have two different ways of walking. You have an ox that's slow and plodding and powerful, and you have this donkey that's just high energy and bouncing off the rafters. You know, he's got barely contained energy. And two very different personalities, two very different ways of acting, of working. You know, the things that the donkey would eat would make the ox sick, and vice versa. The things the ox would eat don't have enough energy in them for the high energy donkey. You know, they're very different things. And in the process of jamming them together or trying to make them work together in this yoke, you're going to injure both of them. Two very valuable beings are injured and damaged by the process. You know, if they're doing some kind of work, you've got the differences. If you're yoked equally, you get your nice straight furrows and everything is done efficiently and you're moving in the right direction. If you're unequally yoked, you get something that looks more like what's on the right. All over the place. You can't plant that, let alone get another one to match it perfectly. Can you imagine getting, you know, a furrow after furrow to match that pattern? It would look like it would just be a mess. You know, it just doesn't work. And so we continue reading in 2 Corinthians 6 in verse 14, "Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers, for what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? What communion has light with darkness? What accord has Christ with Belial, with Satan? Or what part has a believer with an unbeliever?" Do we begin to see what the yoke, being unequally yoked, is really talking about? Do we see what it's really talking about? You know, it's about a frame of mind, a way of thinking that's different from two different ways of thinking. "What agreement has the temple of God with idols? For you are the temple of the living God, as God has said, I will dwell in them and walk among them. I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Therefore, come out from among them. Be separate. Do not touch what is unclean, and I will receive you. I will be a father to you, and you shall be my sons and daughters, says the Lord Almighty." What an amazing calling. And the real capstone to 2 Corinthians 6, we can find right in the very beginning of the next chapter, 2 Corinthians 7, verse 1, where it says, "Therefore, having these promises that we just read, I'll be a father, you'll be my sons and daughters, having those promises, beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all filthiness of flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in fear of the God." Isn't that our big challenge? Isn't that our big challenge? We're in the world, but we're not to be of the world. We're to stand tall. We're to be a light. We're to go against the flow of society, against the other ones, the ones that want to be yoked with us, the ones that want to hold us back, the ones that want to injure us with their way of thinking and their way of life. We can be very glad that Christ prayed for us in John 17, where he said, you know, we can see he's on our side when he says, "I don't pray that you should take them out of the world, but that you should keep them from the evil one, from the evil way of thinking." Now, as Christians, as called out ones, as those who have been called, we understand we're not leaving the world. We're called to be in the world, but not of the world. To understand that better, we have to realize that we are to interact. We are going to interact with the world. Jesus Christ is the best example. Mark 2, verse 15, "Now it happened, as he was dining in Levi's house, that many tax collectors and sinners also sat together with Jesus and his disciples. for there were many, and they followed him. And he didn't tell them, this is a great opportunity for the king of, you know, for the King of Kings and Lord of Lords to say, get away from me, you sinners. You're not good enough to hang out with me. Well, that wasn't what he did, was it? He was among them, but not of them. He lived an example, a different way. And he wasn't yoked to them, though, in that process. He wasn't connecting to their way of thinking. He wasn't connected to their God. He was standing strong in his, and being an example. So we know we have to interact. So we come back to 1 Corinthians 5. Well, we go to 1 Corinthians 5 in verse 9-11. We read, I wrote to you in my epistle not to keep company with sexually immoral people. Okay, Paul is clarifying the teaching that he's given to the people in Corinthians. He says, yet I certainly did not mean that with the sexually immoral people of this world, or even with the covetous or extortioners or idolaters, since then you would need to go out of the world. Understand what he's saying. He's not saying distance yourself from all the bad people in the world who don't know the truth of God. He's actually saying quite the opposite. Be among them, be an example, be different. Be a light among them. But we need to be more careful of something else. What is it we need to be careful of? But now I have written to you not to keep company with anyone named a brother who is sexually immoral or covetous or an idolater, that is, puts anything above their relationship with God, or a reviler or a drunkard or an extortioner, not even to eat with such a person. This is a different concept, isn't it? We're to be in the world and involved with people in the world who are sinners, that we know are sinners. But they haven't been called to what we've been called to. They're not a brother who has God's potential, you know, apparently has God's spirit, or at some time had access to it and is living a way of life that they shouldn't be living. We're not even supposed to spend time or eat with them. You know, we are supposed to interact with society, even if their way of life is at odds with God's law, but it's with those who call themselves brethren, who live at odds while claiming brotherhood. And yes, absolutely, absolutely, we must be willing to restore them to, if they repent, to full brotherhood, if you will, and to be right back in the mix with them as family, close, learning and sharpening one another's iron. But if somebody as a brother is openly living a wrong way of life from the Bible, we are to, Paul is saying, get away from them. Don't be unequally yoked in that setting. You know, we need to, again, be willing to restore if there's repentance, to be guided by the rules we find in Galatians 6, to restore one who has repented and turned from their ways. But when we get into, if we're going to go into a yoke, we need to choose wisely, to think carefully, to consider the choices we're making. You know, the world teaches us that everything is a feeling and everything is an emotional connection. You know, oh wow, she's so beautiful, I want to marry her, I'm in love with her. No, you're in lust with her, really. And you need to choose whether or not that's a relationship that will benefit both of you. You know, if you're a called out one and you're in lust with a beautiful girl who's not called out, it's a bad idea for both of you, because now you're unequally yoked with an unbeliever. Okay, I just brought in marriage, didn't I? Okay, well, what about other circumstances? What about other opportunities of relationships with people? Yes, we do are in to be in the world, but that doesn't mean we have to be closely aligned with people who are sinners, who don't have our calling either. We have to show an example, and sometimes that example is by not getting involved, by stepping away, by getting out of the environment. So we have to make choices about what we do and who are we associated with and who are our true companions and who do we listen to? Who is our authority? You know, it's just as an aside, I brought up, you know, a young man interested in a young woman not in the church, you know, and you think of marriage right away. You can look through the Bible and you can completely take that section out of it, and you can find plenty of information about husbands and wives and how they should interact with each other. You know, Christ is the husband, the bride is the church, and it's replete with tons of information. And I got to tell you, you know, in my life, I've been called, you know, I've been told, oh, you're strong as an ox. And I don't have a problem with that. I'm a guy. I don't mind being likened to a farm draft animal and being powerful, right? but I'm a guy. Let me tell you guys, if you want to dwell with your wives with understanding, the last thing you want to do to talk to them about your relationship is to imply that they're an ox. If you want to have a bad night, if you want to find out how comfortable your couch really is, or how warm the doghouse is, yeah, don't go there. There's plenty of biblical examples. You just don't want to call her a cow. It's not going to go well, I promise you. Almost 30 years. How am I doing, babe? Okay. You know, we do need to consider what yoke we want to be associated with. Who do we want to be in concert with moving together? Amos 3:3, can two walk together unless they are agreed? There is a yoke we should desire, brethren. We read in Matthew 11, verse 27 through 30, all things have been delivered to me by my Father, and no one knows the Son except the Father. Nor does anyone know the Father except the Son, and the one to whom the Son wills to reveal him. Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Imagine that, to be in Jesus Christ's yoke. Now, I'm going to make a confession now. When I was first looking into this, I've read these verses before, and I had this image of, I go to Christ and I say, I'll take my yoke. And he goes, okay. And he picks up his yoke from over here and he sticks it on me, and it's light and it's pretty cool, you know, because he's the guy driving me. That's not what this is talking about. That's not the image we're supposed to get from this. He's wearing the yoke. He's offering the opening next to him. Join me in my yoke, is what he's saying. Put my yoke upon you. Join me in this yoke, and we'll be guided by the Father, the drover, the guy back there with the reins in his hand, and I'll show you how to follow him, and you'll come along with me. And if you just relax, it'll be easy. Join me, you know, hop into my yoke, strap in, and let's get this thing done, kid. And he offers that to all of us figuratively. In the physical sense, you know, obviously we're not putting on a real physical yoke, but spiritually he can be yoked to each one of us individually. And we can be driven and led by the Father, and he'll follow us. All things have been delivered to me. Let's see, where we go. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Think about that, yoked to Christ with Father, the Father God as our teamster, as our leader, as our drover. You know, Christ certainly understands the burdens of sin, and he can help us to follow the directions of God. When we trust the Father's leadership and we're in lockstep with our yoke mate, Jesus Christ, you know, he understands life's tough. He understands there's challenges along the way, and there's many burdens to haul in this life, are there not? You know, just getting through life and paying the taxes and dealing with the bills and dealing with the health issues and dealing with loss, dealing with the death of close ones and dealing with all the pain that life can bring. But he says, come on, I'll show you how to get through it all. Isn't that amazing? That's what we've been called to. How important is that? How much more important is that than the idols that we want to put ahead of him? We have to trust that he's already borne the heaviest load that can be borne. He laid down his life for all of us. And we need to be confident of this very thing, reading from Philippians 1:6, that he who has begun a good work in you will complete it until the day of Jesus Christ. God will complete the work that he started in you when he called you, when he cleansed you, and when he put you in, when he offered you the yoke of Jesus Christ, when he offered to put you next to this well-trained yoke mate and said, follow, just follow me. I'll show you how to do this. God will complete that work. The fact is, in our life, there's going to be a level of burden that we have to endure by living God's way of life in this society. It's different than what everybody else is doing. It requires us to accept that burden. But there are so many ways that we have a choice to decide who is in our life. We can choose to avoid being unequally yoked. We can choose to avoid the relationships and activities that drag us into the worldly thinking, that drag us into the crooked furrows of the world's way. We can willingly be taught under the yoke of Christ. We can keep God number one in our lives. As much as depends on us, brethren, let's choose. Let's choose not to be unequally yoked or to get into those relationships and activities of this world, but instead to join Jesus Christ and the Father in getting his work done.